From the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, this is NIH Research Radio. Welcome to episode 37 of NIH Research Radio, with news about the ongoing medical research at the National Institutes of Health, the nation's medical research agency. I'm your host, Bill Schmalfeld. Coming up on this edition, Lauren Waddell has a story about how child abuse may be a contributor to a number of discontrolled behaviors in women, according to a study at the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. We'll look at an NIAAA survey that shows there's a lost decade between the age of onset of alcohol use disorder and treatment. Wally Akinso has a report about a study supported by the National Institute of Arthritis and Musculoskeletal and Skin Diseases that indicates surgery may be the preferred option for some back conditions. And Lauren will be back with a story about inherited listening skills. But first, there's a new National Institute of Aging publication designed to help folks better understand older America. That's next on NIH Research Radio. Uterine fibroids, the most common non-cancerous tumors of the uterus. If you're suffering with uterine fibroids and are between the ages of 25 and 50, the NIH invites you to take part in a clinical study. All study tests and related treatments are provided at no cost, and compensation is provided. For more info, call 866-999-5053 or log on to clinicaltrials.gov. The National Institutes of Health is a nonprofit government agency, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. It's a comprehensive look at the state of older America. A new publication, Growing Older in America, the Health and Retirement Study, is available online from the National Institute on Aging, part of the National Institutes of Health. This study offers a look at the condition of older Americans, their health, work, and economic status, as well as their retirement and family lives. It's based on the Health and Retirement Study, a national survey of Americans over age 50. Dr. Richard Suzman, director of the Behavioral and Social Science Program at the NIA, said there are some surprising findings in the study.
One of the things the study has done is given rise to other countries producing copies of the study so we can do comparisons. And we were very surprised to find out that those in the U.S., and this just looked at whites to keep it more controlled, but they had objectively worse health than their counterparts in England. When they controlled for things like smoking, exercise, obesity, and other risk factors, there's still a significant amount unexplained of the difference, and so it's given rise to some interesting puzzles.
Dr. Suzman said another surprising finding of the study was the impact of a serious illness within the age 65 and older group and its effect on the family's financial status.
It appeared that onset of a serious disease, especially when coupled with some chronic resulting disability, add up a fairly large fraction of people's wealth over a short time. And a good deal of that was not out-of-pocket medical expenditures, but loss of earnings either from the individual affected or somebody else in the family like a spouse. So it seemed as if people were relatively uninsured for disability.
The online publication is intended to familiarize policymakers, researchers, health and retirement experts, the news media, and anyone interested in examining data on the combined health and economic conditions of older Americans. For more information, log on to www.nia.nih.gov. Could child abuse in her past have an effect on a woman's risk for alcoholism? Lauren Waddell filed this report.
Child abuse may be a contributor to a number of discontrolled behaviors in women, according to a study at the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism at the National Institutes of Health. Researchers for the study have found that the existence of a particular variant of the monoamine oxidase A, or MAOA gene, can have a significant impact on an individual's resiliency to intense childhood trauma. Dr. Francesca Ducci, a visiting fellow with the Laboratory of Neurogenetics at the NIAAA, did significant work on the study and found that
Subjects who are exposed to sexual abuse during childhood are more likely to later on develop alcoholism and ASPD.
ASPD stands for Antisocial Personality Disorder and is one of the possible risks stemming from childhood abuse. Dr. David Goldman, chief of the Laboratory of Neurogenetics at NIAAA, said that linking abuse to serious psychiatric disorders, more than just everyday behavioral problems, is an important key finding.
Now, this study, for the first time, really underlines that the gene also has an important effect on discontrolled behaviors in women. And it's really the first time that this gene has been linked not just to discontrolled behaviors or personality, but to a major psychiatric diagnosis, namely alcoholism, and also to the antisocial personality disorder. Moving this from the realm of a behavioral difference to the realm of vulnerability to a devastating disease like alcoholism is a further advance in knowledge.
Dr. Goldman added that this study is particularly interesting because it clearly shows how a gene-environment interaction can have significant effects on serious diseases such as alcoholism. From the National Institutes of Health, I'm Lauren Waddell in Bethesda, Maryland.
When we come back, Wally Akinso has a report on whether or not back surgery is the preferred treatment for some common back ailments. That's next on NIH Research Radio. A key to good health is eating healthy foods. So, when you're dashing around the supermarket, dash to the produce aisle for fresh fruits and vegetables. Dash to the dairy case for low-fat milk products. Dash to the foods that are lower in saturated fat, trans fat, cholesterol, sodium, and added sugars. Dash to the foods that have been proven in the fight against high blood pressure. For more information about the Dash Eating Plan, log on to www.dashplan.org. This message brought to you by the National Institutes of Health and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. If you've ever had a back problem, you're familiar with the argument, surgery or conservative treatment. Now there's evidence that surgical treatment is the treatment of choice for some common back problems. Wally Akinso has this report.
Surgery versus conservative therapy. That's the choice that faces many people with a variety of common back problems. Now a study supported by the National Institute of Arthritis and Musculoskeletal and Skin Diseases indicates that surgery may be the preferred option for some conditions. The study shows that for degenerative spondylolisthesis with spinal stenosis, surgery provides significantly better results than non-surgical alternatives. Degenerative spondylolisthesis is a condition in which the breakdown of cartilage between the vertebrae of the spine causes one vertebrae to slip over the one below, causing stenosis, or a narrowing of the canal through which spinal nerves pass. Dr. James N. Weinstein, lead author of the study and chairman of the Departments of Orthopedics at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center and Dartmouth Medical School, discusses the trial.
SPORT is the acronym we used, which is Spine Patient Outcomes Research Trial. And the reason we did that is we wanted to look at several of the most common reasons for which patients have surgery in the United States. The study was designed to look at the three most common reasons for which patients have surgery in the United States, and that's the herniated disc, or where a disc is pressing on a nerve in your lower back. Spinal stenosis, imagining if you had your right hand grabbing your small, middle, and ring finger and squeezing them as tight as you could. That's spinal stenosis of varying degrees. And then we looked at spinal stenosis with one vertebrae slipping forward with the same kind of compression of the fingers, but one of the bones in the back moving slightly forward on the other. The idea was to understand whether surgical or non-surgical treatment would be better for patients with those three conditions.
Dr. Weinstein said degenerative spondylolisthesis can result in narrowing of the spinal column, which can put pressure on the nerves, resulting in pain in the buttocks or legs with walking or standing. Dr. Weinstein added that it's important to give physicians and patients solid information about treatment.
I think the idea that we hope to provide through SPORT is the benefits of surgical versus non-surgical treatment, and to put that information into what I like to call an informed choice choice format. Typically, when a patient goes to their doctor, the doctor gives them a diagnosis. If they're going to recommend surgery, ask them to sign an informed consent. I think the informed consent process is rather outdated and arcane, and what we should be moving towards is an informed choice method. So patients who face a decision of one treatment versus another when the results might be equivalent or similar should be left in the patient's hand in consultation with their doctor. So the SPORT information provides significant information to patients about making a choice about surgical and non-surgical treatment for these conditions.
The study, published in the May 31st issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, is the second in a series reporting findings of SPORT. Dr. Weinstein said, while it is generally not a good idea to rush into back surgery, the trial shows that there are conditions for which surgery clearly is the most effective treatment choice. This is Wally Akinso at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
Are you one of those people who can listen to two things at once and understand both? Thank your mom and dad for that. Lauren Waddell explains.
The ability to hear and actually comprehend two distinct conversations simultaneously, such as a phone conversation in one ear and a friend talking in the other, isn't just a reflection of your dedicated friendship. It is also largely a result of your genes, according to a new study by the National Institute on Deafness and Other Communication Disorders at the National Institutes of Health. The study, which took place at a Twins convention in Twinsburg, Ohio, was led by NIDCD scientist Dr. Robert Morrell and shows a genetic link to auditory processes.
Our novel finding is that because we gave these tests to sets of twins, we were able to demonstrate that that variability is actually due to shared genes. So it's largely a heritable trait.
Dr. Morrell worked alongside Dr. Carmen Brewer, who is chief of the Audiology Otolaryngology branch at the NIDCD. Both Dr. Morrell and Dr. Brewer brought up the high heritability of dichotic listening, which is the ability to listen to two things at once, and at about 75% is comparable to the heritability of both diabetes and height. Dr. Brewer explains the significance of understanding the causes of poor dichotic listening.
It helps us to understand the potential causes of poor dichotic listening performance that don't seem to be related to an insult or an injury. And when a person has poor performance, you want to know what's causing it. So this leads us to have an understanding of a potential etiologic diagnosis or a potential underlying cause, that this child is doing poorly not because they have necessarily a disease or they've had an injury to their auditory system, but because this is a trait that they've inherited.
Researchers believe this information will benefit both older people who struggle with hearing loss and loss of comprehension, as well as children who experience auditory processing disorders. For more information about NIDCD research and programs, see the website at www.nidcd.nih.gov. From the National Institutes of Health, I'm Lauren Waddell in Bethesda, Maryland.
When we come back, they're calling it the Lost Decade. We'll explain, coming up next on NIH Research Radio. How can you boost your chances for a healthy pregnancy? What should you do to recognize and prevent deep vein thrombosis? Where can you turn for the latest word on bladder control surgery for women and protection against skin cancer? It's the July edition of NIH News and Health. Each issue of NIH News and Health is packed with information and web resources designed to help you make better decisions about your health. NIH News and Health, available online at newsandhealth.nih.gov. They're calling it the lost decade. It's the nearly 10-year gap between the time when a person experiences onset of alcohol dependence or abuse and the time that person eventually seeks treatment. According to the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism's 2001-2002 National Epidemiological Survey on Alcohol and Related Conditions, also known as NESARC, this gap is nearly unchanged from what was reported in 1991-1992. Dr. Mark Willenbring, director of the Division of Treatment and Recovery Research at the NIAAA, said this is dismaying information given the effectiveness and availability of proven treatments and the fact that alcoholism is not a difficult disease to diagnose.
Clinicians should basically be screening for the presence of heavy drinking, and by that we mean exceeding our guidelines, which is no more than 3 drinks in one day for a woman and no more than 4 for a man. If they simply ask about that, then they will identify heavy drinkers earlier in the course of the illness.
Dr. Willenbring said that reluctance to seek treatment plays a role in this lost decade between onset and treatment.
Alcoholism is a very stigmatizing disease, and people are very reluctant to accept a diagnosis. Entering a treatment program is in some ways a kind of public procedure. It changes a lot of things in your life. Also, people lack access to treatment. Insurance companies, for example, often set higher copays and more limits on care than they do for other chronic disorders. And finally, the treatments that are offered in most centers around the country, which is group counseling and AA, are treatments that people, for the most part, don't like much.
However, Dr. Willenbring said there's some optimism to be found in the NESARC survey.
The good news is that the average length of the longest episode of alcoholism is about 4 years, and 72%, almost three-quarters of people who have alcoholism, only have one episode. So a lot of people are getting well from this disorder.
For more info, log on to www.niaaa.nih.gov. And with that, we come to the end of this episode of NIH Research Radio. Please join us on Friday, August 10th, when episode 38 of NIH Research Radio will be available for download. These stories are also available on the NIH Radio News Service website, www.nih.gov/news/radio. Our daily 60-second feature, NIH Health Matters, is heard on radio stations nationwide, as well as on XM Satellite Radio, the Health Star Radio Network, and online at www.federalnewsradio.com. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please feel free to contact me. The info is right there on the podcast webpage. The email address, ws159h@nih.gov. Once again, my email address is ws159h@nih.gov. I'm your host, Bill Schmalfeld. NIH Research Radio is a presentation of the NIH Radio News Service, part of the News Media Branch, Office of Communications and Public Liaison, in the Office of the Director at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, an agency of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.